Και προς τούτου έκανα. find our subject matter in today's lesson in Tobit 4:14. Do not hold over till the next day the wages of any man who works for you, but pay him at once. And if you serve God, you will receive payment. Last week, we discussed some points about the proper attitude, or what should be the proper attitude, rather, of the employer towards the employee. Improper and broken down relations have led to revolutions, massive strikes and unemployment, and civil unrest. These are very serious subjects of global dimensions, and we must say that we are barely scratching the surface by bringing up some helpful elements. It is very important that the element of fairness and justice is ingrained in a person from the years of childhood. If we are taught to be fair among our playmates, teammates, classmates, then we will also continue to be fair and just as employers or employees. We must become a complete and refined human being. And a truly refined person is only the true Christian. Only a Christian, a practicing Christian, can get close to the likeness of God, near to perfection, as perfect as humanly possible, that is. As Christians, we must develop the feeling of civil justice. Again, last week, if you recall, we made some points about the relations of the employer towards the employer. In this session, we will address the proper attitude of the employee towards his employer. And now we will begin to look into the subject scripturally. We read in Colossians 3:22. The Spirit of God writes through St. Paul, "Slaves, obey your masters in everything, and do it not only when the eye of your master is on you and to win their favor, but with sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it with all your heart, as working for the Lord and not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord who you are serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for his wrong, and there is no favoritism in him." This is an exceptional section of labor justice. If people paid attention to these verses, applying them in the workplace, we would avoid many of our problems today. So slaves, obey your masters in the flesh. In those times, workers were not free. They were bought at a price, and they were used for any work that their master needed to complete. Today, we do not have the form of slavery, but of employment. So if you are an employee, you must obey your boss. Do what he asks you to do. If you can do it, you must obey. If you cannot, tell him, "I don't know how to do it. I cannot do this." He's not going to expect you to work on the 50th floor of a skyscraper washing windows if you're afraid of heights. You can say, "I'm sorry, but I'm not very good with ladders, or I get dizzy," and so on. Do what he asks you. Most people today refuse to do something extra around the workplace. "I was hired to be a forklift operator and not clean floors, but if you don't clean up the spilled liquid on the floor, your customer will slip, fall, break his neck, your company will be sued, and you will end up out of a job." "I don't care. I don't clean floors." Unfortunately, this is not uncommon today. As Christians, we expel this type of attitude. We obey. We are obedient. The second point that's presented here is to work diligently, and not only when we are being watched. Work not only when your supervisor's eyes are on you and in order to win their favor. This is a great passion and epidemic to be found in a high percentage of today's employees. To only try hard when my boss, supervisor, employer is next to me, and to slack off when he's out of sight. This shows the very poor mentality of people today, a decadence of humanity, a selfish attitude. No, we must work regardless if we're being watched or not. The Christian will work, he will produce because he feels that his master is Christ, and he has to answer to him. This is a matter of basic honesty. You promise to work for so much per hour or per week, and you will be productive. You must work regardless if you are being watched or not. This is extremely important. Unfortunately, dishonesty is widespread today. People pay lip service and eye service. The King James text calls this epidemic eye service, from the Greek ophthalmodulia, to work when eyes are upon me. And partners of this eye service are laziness, obscenity, dishonesty, lack of love, ungratefulness, insubordination, the tendency to talk back, ill nature, brown nosing, wanting to impress people when watched. In other words, if you have the syndromes of eye service, you are a psychologically warped and damaged human being. A third point made by St. Paul is to work with sincerity of heart. Work for the sake of working, with a simple heart, not because you may get a raise or a promotion, because you want to be noticed and rewarded. Always looking for better wages. Do your work as best as you can, regardless of these factors. Work with simplicity of heart and without a number of different motives. Fourth point is fearing God. Most certainly, the fear of God will come to correct my attitude towards my employer and towards the work that I must complete. A fifth point, whatever you do, do it with your soul. Put your heart and soul into it. Learn to enjoy it. Enjoy your work. Unfortunately, a great number of us today can be characterized by the rather popular car bumper sticker, "I love my job. It's the work I hate." This is not a joking matter. The majority of the working people today dislike their job. They take it for granted, and after a little while, they show up to work simply because they need a paycheck to go on with their lives. How many people today work with all their heart for someone else? Not many. And this is such an important quality, to work with all my heart, just like I would be working for myself, just like I were the owner of the establishment. Another point, I will work as though my immediate employer was Christ himself. If Christ would assign me a project or a task, how would I bring it to completion? Would I slack off? Would I be asking for a raise every couple of days? Christ was a carpenter. Up to 30 years of his life, he worked as a carpenter without circular saws and miter saws. All these wonderful tools today, which make work a child's play compared to those years, work was tough back then. Can you imagine cutting a huge walnut tree trunk with a handsaw? No chainsaws back then. Christ was practicing the profession of carpentry. People would ask him to complete some projects for them, for payment, of course. Can we imagine Christ in a workshop? Then this is how we must work, with sincerity and honesty and diligence. We must think, God is watching me, and he will repay me. God will reward me. He rewarded Joseph in Egypt in Potiphar's mansion. Joseph worked with his heart and soul. And this did not go unnoticed by his immediate supervisor, who gave him the keys to his entire estate very quickly. Joseph, you are in charge of everything and everyone around here, with the exception of my wife. Joseph was about 18 years old. He worked for Potiphar for a couple of years, and then he went to jail. Thank God. God wanted to watch him from the immorality and the lustfulness of his master's wife. The book of Sirach says, the holy wisdom, the second person of the Holy Trinity, was with him in jail and protected him, giving him more divine wisdom. Joseph was a worker in a strange land. He worked for the Egyptians with all his heart, and God rewarded him. This is such a great example again for our young people who may want to work very little and make a lot of money, or make money without working, look for easy money, live off investments, and so on. God blesses the working hands of a man. Work is a blessing. So let's begin to look at work a little differently. If our work is honest and above board, then we must look at it and believe that it was provided for us from God. God provides everything. So we must begin to do our work for Him, for Christ, for the glory of His name. St. Paul says in Corinthians, whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, you must do it for the glory of God. Am I glorifying the name of Christ in the way I perform my duties at the workplace, in the office, or in the plant, or in the field? A final point here in Colossians from St. Paul. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for his wrong. If we take advantage of our employer by slacking off, by wasting time, by wasting materials, if we do anything wrong, we will be repaid for our wrong by God Himself. How? Only He knows how. And now let's talk about the phenomenon of a strike. Workers on strike. The concept of a strike is so common in the workplace that it is now legally protected by most governments. The workers can walk out in massive numbers to force some change from their employers. Again, strikes would not be necessary in a Christian society. This vicious cycle of labor abuse, strike, the creation of unions, all these simply show the existence of a very low level in employer-employee relations. Both sides are looking out for themselves. The right to strike was enacted because of the tendency of the employer to show injustice to his employees. And now the employees, moved by the same motives of greed, threaten to strike and hold this as the sword of Damocles over the head of the employer. The worker now blackmails the employer. If you don't give what I want, I will go on strike at the worst possible time, and you will get hurt. Unfortunately, the right to strike is often abused and taken advantage of from other factors, such as that of the political arena, especially in small countries where massive strikes can help topple the existing government or at least cause the loss of election for a certain party. This vicious cycle hurts everyone, billions of dollars are fruitlessly lost from this cycle. Families suffer. We see all these things in our local news. We must mention once again that the Word of God says that the worker is worthy of his wages. The worker who performs a service, he must get paid. St. Paul says, do not muzzle an ox while treading out the grain. Let the animal eat from the mill. It needs to eat. St. Paul here in Corinthians talks about the deeper spiritual meaning of this verse. He refers to the right of the worker of the church, that is, to be compensated. The workers of the vineyard must get paid from the vineyard. Again, every occupation, every work that we undertake should somehow glorify God. The work of our clergy, deacons, priests, bishops, is directly related to the glory of God. Their work is to serve God and His church and to assist in the salvation of His people. All the people that work in the area of the church work for His glory. The celebration of the divine liturgy should be carried out with the utmost care and fear of God, with extreme precision. Let's not forget the sons of Eli, the priest, in the Old Testament. They were not very careful, and they were given a very bad picture to the congregation by offending the sacrifices. The people were scandalized by them. They were taking the offerings before they were blessed and eating them. They lacked fear and respect for the holy things of God. They lacked faith. God punished them, and they were both killed in a battle. I believe their father was also killed for not being strict enough with them. We dare not be lazy with the work of God. A bad celebrant somehow reduces the glory of God, at least in the eyes of the people. Likewise, a terrible sermon reduces the glory of the gospel. The work of God, if it bores the listeners, it reduces the importance of the subject. Once in a while, it is possible that the preacher, teacher, may have a valid excuse that he cannot deliver a very fresh sermon. But to do this Sunday after Sunday, or catechism after catechism, this is nothing but laziness. It takes a lot of work to produce a good message, hours upon hours of study, research, practice. It is not an easy task. Those of us that teach Sunday school, we must take it very seriously. If we don't study enough, if we don't pray, if we are unprepared, we will be held accountable by God. Again, once in a while, things may happen and we may not have prepared adequately. But if we do our homework on a weekly basis, we will have enough reserves to pull us through. But this should be the exception, not the rule. Otherwise, our good relations as servants and workers of God will be at stake. Jeremiah says, may he be accursed, he who carries out the works of the Lord with laziness, half-heartedly. How did the apostles work for the Lord? How did St. Paul work? How did they work? How did they work the gospel? 12 people spread the gospel in the entire known world, mostly on foot. St. Paul gives us an idea in 2 Corinthians in his 11th chapter. The accusations of some false apostles force him to write this. They had the audacity to accuse St. Paul, and he writes, I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, and been exposed to death again and again. Five times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I have been constantly on the move. I have been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my own countrymen, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at the sea, and in danger from false brothers. I have labored and toiled and often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst, and I've often gone without food. I have been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all of the churches. St. Paul worked the gospel with all his heart and all his soul. This is also true for his co-workers, Silas, Barnabas, Timothy, Titus. They serve as the ultimate examples for our bishops, priests, deacons, and monastics. They sacrificed themselves. They gave their entire life, their entire being to Christ. How much of our life do we give to Christ and His gospel today? So far, we talked about employers, employees, and workers in God's service. Some of our young people may think, well, all this does not really concern us. We are not employers or employees. True, but you are something else. You are students. You have great responsibility to learn and to train. Your teachers work very hard to prepare and teach, and you must show up on time, well rested, to absorb. You cannot stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning watching television because your brain will be asleep all through class. And about cutting classes, well, there are many reasons for that. But we must say that one of the reasons could be the quality of today's teachers. The teacher who looks beyond his paycheck will prepare, use his imagination, challenge and motivate his students to run to get to his class. There were days where the best minds, the best speakers, dedicated themselves to the teaching profession. I remember one young female history teacher. She presented her lesson with such passion, with such strength, you thought you were in a theater. She had a great impact on the class. A dynamic teacher will attract and motivate the students. At any rate, the student today must realize that his responsibility is not to his teachers or even to his parents, who may be paying for his education, but his immediate employer is Christ. Christ wants you to be a solid individual with strong foundation. You need to learn to read and write so someday you can end up in his service. Can you imagine the medical student who does not pay attention to some details? Tomorrow he will be killing patients. Or if you become an attorney, you will be sending clients to jail because of your negligence now as a student. One of the Psalms says, grab a hold of godly wisdom, godly education. In other words, roll up your sleeves and get into your quest for knowledge and education. Be thirsty for wisdom, especially godly wisdom, lest the Lord is angered and you lose the way of righteousness. And if we become people of godly wisdom and education, we will receive our reward from God. And this is how Tobit concludes this advice to his son about justice and fairness in a workplace. The bottom line is that any form of injustice should be avoided. It works both ways. The employer must be fair and the employee must be fair as well. Knowing that behind the employer or the professor or the teacher is our great employer, Christ. In reality, the bad employers and the bad employees only harm themselves. They will repay for the evil they do. Christ and the fear of Christ should be present to guide our actions of our everyday relations in the area of employment.